Aloha, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Dr. Saira Yameen, and I'm a professor at the Daniel K. Inouye Asia-Pacific Center for Security Studies. Today, I'm going to talk about Women, Peace, and Security, or WPS, a concept seeking to advance much greater participation of women alongside men in the important role they play in security sector institutions. I will talk about the premise for the Women, Peace, and Security agenda, related developments in the international landscape, and opportunities and barriers for gender integration in the security sector. WPS is a global peace and security agenda, recognizing that state security is inextricably tied to human security. It is a transformative concept that, on the one hand, recognizes that today's security landscape is very different from the way it was about 100 years ago when the incidence of interstate warfare was significantly higher. During the world wars in the 20th century, it is believed that 90% of the casualties were soldiers. Post-World War II, the threat of interstate warfare has declined substantially, and new forms and manifestations of insecurity are arising. Communities are at greater risk than ever before. And in the battlefields in contemporary conflict, it is believed that more than 90% of the casualties are communities, not soldiers. It is therefore important for security practitioners to shift their perspective to human security and rethink how to effectively mitigate the evolving risks our countries and regions face. Here are some examples of the types of security threats the world is beset with. These threats will likely remain high over the next decade or so. Water and food insecurity, climate change, extreme weather events, and profound social instability. To be sure, these challenges cannot be fully understood or addressed without considering the human dimension, the experience of communities, of families, and of individuals. How are they impacted by a water crisis, for example? The best policy response to any of these challenges would be one that is generated through a participatory process, a whole-of-society mechanism in understanding how communities are affected by water crisis and how they may be engaged in generating solutions at the village, town, or district levels, for instance. This process fundamentally requires both men and women to have a say in defining and understanding the risk and in being part of the solution. It is important to bear in mind that while women represent 50% of those affected in a conflict or disaster zone, they are often underrepresented in decision making. This is a considerable disadvantage. It is especially important to consider the perspective of women and girls and how their experiences may be different than those of men, particularly as we seek to mitigate the threats to communities in pursuit of sustainable security. In many traditional societies, women are also the primary caregivers of children and the elderly. Women's insecurity and its neglect therefore carries social, psychological, and economic implications for families, societies, and states. Without a doubt, men and boys are also very vulnerable in conflict and disaster zones in different or similar ways. Their concerns, as well as those of all primary stakeholders, must also be considered in designing holistic and viable problem-solving strategies. Men, women, children, the elderly, everyone is impacted by war and violence. But evidence suggests that women and girls bear the consequences of conflict disproportionately. According to a former commander of UN peacekeeping forces, Major General Patrick Kamat, it is more dangerous to be a woman than to be a soldier in contemporary conflict zones. Rape has been recognized as a war tactic and is often used to terrorize and humiliate the enemy. Evidence suggests women and girls are highly vulnerable to disappearances, trafficking, sexual slavery, forced pregnancies, and sexually transmitted diseases. Also today, there are over 60 million people in the world who are internally displaced or refugees. Of these, more than 80% are women and children who depend on them. It is critical to consider their experience in mitigating the effects of insecurity. According to the World Health Organization, about half the annual global mortality occurs in conflict and crisis-afflicted environments. What happens to the children when mothers die? The list of community vulnerabilities is long. Societal implications are immense. Women and girls are also impacted by terrorism and violent extremism. While evidence suggests that women are often the first to push back against terrorists, they're also increasingly being recruited by them. They are trained as combatants, as suicide bombers, while also being subjected to sexual slavery and other types of gender-based violence. Evidence suggests that a sense of empowerment is often a key motivation for women who join terrorist groups, and that female terrorists are likely to come from environments where women's participation in public life is restricted. Scholarly evidence suggests that women's suicide bombers have a 4-time higher kill rate than male suicide bombers because of the element of surprise. In thinking about women's role, both in contributing to and countering terrorism, their perspectives must be better understood. Yet despite women's direct stake and role in security, the gender perspective remains egregiously underrepresented in defining and understanding its complexities. This visual on women's participation in peace negotiations is illustrative. It is from a study done by UN Women, demonstrating that from 1992 to 2011, women made up 9% of negotiators, 4% of witnesses and signatories, and only 2% of chief mediators. The critical mass theory of women's leadership, an important one to consider, posits that in order for women's perspective to be meaningfully integrated, they must have an approximate 30 to 35% representation in the security sector. This would apply to peace negotiations, parliaments, government agencies, essentially all state and non-governmental organizations at the national, regional, and international levels with a role in promoting security. Afghanistan provides an example of a fragile security context where the lack of women's inclusion in the security sector is a barrier to societal progress and welfare. Data suggests that about 9 women in 10 in Afghanistan experience some kind of abuse. According to the International Development Law Organization, without women in the justice sector, the fairness of judicial outcomes and women's access to justice are compromised. Hence, it would be fair to argue that without building the capacities of a critical mass of Afghan women as judges, lawyers, prosecutors, police women, justice may remain elusive for one half of Afghanistan's population, with implications for Afghan society in general. A combination of some of the factors listed on this slide may impede women's inclusion in security sector development. factors such as culture, gender stereotypes, lack of policy and compliance with international frameworks, lack of funding for women's broader participation and capacity building, and for addressing their gendered needs often play a role. The lack of systematic data, knowledge production on women's contributions to the security sector also inhibits policy formulation and budgeting to advance women's effective participation in the security sector. The good news is that despite many of the aforementioned barriers, the number of women in the security sector is increasing worldwide, slowly but surely. For example, more women are being recruited in the police services, in peacekeeping, in humanitarian assistance, in disaster relief operations. In recent decades, a number of international legal frameworks on women's rights and inclusion have been introduced. Integrating these frameworks in the domestic sphere provides a way forward. I would particularly like to draw your attention to the United Nations Security Council Resolution 1325 on women, peace and security, and a number of supporting resolutions adopted since the year 2000. Importantly, this resolution was the first time the international community acknowledged that while women are disproportionately vulnerable to armed conflict, they have an intrinsic role in conflict prevention and resolution. UNSCR 1325 has four priority areas. The four P's underscore women's role in security through participation, prevention, protection, and peacekeeping. UNSCR 1325 Plus, an inclusive peace and security agenda, is binding on all 193 member states of the United Nations. To date, 67 countries have national action plans aligned with UNSCR 1325's objectives. More are coming soon. According to the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, a high-impact national action plan on women, peace and security would have three core components. One, recognizing that state-centric security is tied to people-centric security. Two, addressing behaviors and attitudes, societal barriers to gender integration. And three, women's meaningful participation in security sector institutions through a critical mass of at least 30 to 35% women. In the final analysis, representative and meaningful integration of women in the security sector will require building their capacities, policies and incentives to recruit and retain them, giving them opportunities for advancement in leadership ranks, and ensuring that the gender perspective is coherently integrated in security sector policies and implementation. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for taking your time to listen to this podcast on Women, Peace and Security by Saira Yameen at the Daniel K. Inouye Asia Pacific Center for Security Studies.